This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
Nobody wants AI to go off the rails. We don't just want it to go off and do things that massively harm human beings. We want to, in short, control AI. We want to make sure that we create the right kinds of controls such that it can't go off the rails. A lot of people call this the alignment problem. We want to make sure that AI is aligned with our values. But my guest today, Marcus Arvin, who's a professor of philosophy at the University of Tampa and author of several books on ethics and political theory, says this is totally impossible. We can't possibly control AI, not fully, because AI shows up in so many different contexts that we can't possibly predict how it's going to act in all those different contexts. And sure, we can, as it were, raise up the AI in various kinds of ways. We can train it in various ways. But the truth is that at the end of the day, just like we can't predict exactly what, say, our kids will do once they leave the house and, say, go off to college, we can't really predict with great certainty or even a tremendous amount of confidence exactly how AI will act once it's in the wild. So what does this mean? How should we treat AI given that we can't fully have it under our control? Now, look, one thing is, yes, we should try to train it up as ethically as we can, yada, yada, yada. But when that gives out, and it will give out, so says Marcus, what are we supposed to do? And his prescription is this: we should never give more power to a single AI than we would give to a single individual. Never give more power to a single AI than to a single individual. It's an extremely fascinating suggestion. It's also one that would, if you like, kneecap AI because it's not allowing it to do all the things that it could possibly do. This is a call for constraining the capacities, the permissions that we give to AI. Before we jump into that conversation, there are three things that I want to highlight because they come up in the conversation, and you may or may not already be familiar with those things. The first is that he makes a lot of references to Hobbes. That's the philosopher Thomas Hobbes, who talks a lot about people desiring power after power, just wanting more and more power. And he thinks that AI is like that, and that creates a problem because power corrupts. That's the first sort of little bit of background that you might want. The second is that we talk a little bit about red teaming. Red teaming of an AI is when you take a large language model like a ChatGPT or a Claude, and you give it lots of different kinds of prompts. And you try to see, essentially, can you break the thing? Can you make it say or do unethical things? Can you make it create toxic content? Can you make it give directions on how to create a nuclear bomb or something along those lines? So red teaming is the process by which you're testing and testing, or it's a process of testing the model to see if it does ethically bad things. We also talk about whether we also red team our children and what the comparison is between red teaming children and red teaming AI. That's an important concept for you to know. And finally, you may or may not have heard of the paperclip problem. The paperclip problem is a famous thought experiment by philosopher Nick Bostrom, according to which you tell an AI to create as many paperclips as possible, and then in its mission to create as many paperclips as possible, it starts to strip the entire Earth of all of its natural resources just to make paperclips, which of course is a disaster for humans, even though it's great for paperclips. So that's the paperclip problem. It's essentially the thought that AI can have a number of huge unintended consequences because it can, if you like, mindlessly or valuelessly pursue a goal that we give it. Okay, that's what this episode is about. Can we control AI? Probably not. And if we can't, what are we supposed to do about it? I am your host, Reid Blackman. This is Ethical Machines. Oh, another thing. If you want to email me at em@readblackman.com, thoughts about who I should have on the show, trenchant criticism of the show, whatever you like. And finally, I'm doing a lot of writing on Substack. That's at readblackman.substack.com. So if you want to go read some stuff that I write about ethical issues in tech, go to readblackman.substack.com. All right, that's enough out of me. Let's go talk to Marcus. So Marcus, people are relatively, I don't know, apoplectic about AI safety. And when they hear things like OpenAI or Microsoft disbanded their AI safety team or something along those lines, people go nuts. And you have an interesting position, which is something like, I mean, maybe this is overstating it. You can tell me if I'm overstating your position. Don't worry about it. The AI safety stuff is totally misguided anyway, fundamentally misguided, going in the wrong direction. That's a bold claim. Do I have that right?
It's correct. I have work showing, I think, that AI can never be made safe any more than a human being can be made safe. Human beings behave in all kinds of bad ways, and we have to put in place laws and police and military force to protect ourselves from bad human beings. And my work shows that's all we can ever expect. That's the best we can expect with AI, or at least the kinds of AI that are being developed now, which are large language models.
Okay, so why is that? We don't just have sort of military, police force, et cetera. We also have upbringing, right? We raise people in a certain way. We appeal to, I don't know, natural sentiments or something along those lines of people as we raise them. There's moral development. There's emotional development. Yeah. And then I take it the analog is going to be something like, yeah, look, with AI, we've got that same kind of thing where we try to, as it were, train up. We try to raise our LLMs in a way that manifests certain kind of character traits or even virtues, that here's a bunch of principles, just like we tell human beings, don't lie unless blah, blah, blah. We might say the same thing to an AI. Is it the same thing?
There's this thing with human beings, right? And it's often said that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. There's this phenomenon that's been studied in empirical psychology called hubris syndrome. And it turns out that when humans gain power over others, their upbringing and training rapidly or quickly gets thrown to the wind, right? We become less liable to empathize with others when we have power over them. There's even studies showing that people who drive fancy cars tend to cut other people off more than others. And so the problem is that human beings are in many ways power seeking, right? Philosopher Thomas Hobbes famously argued that we seek power after power.
If you didn't say Hobbes, I was going to say Hobbes.
Yeah. So we seek power after power. We have goals and we want to achieve our goals. And it just so happens, and Hume argued this, that like justice and morality are possible because humans have a kind of rough equality of power, right? So when you're a child, you don't just get to behave with impunity. You receive positive feedback for behaving well and hopefully enough negative feedback for behaving badly that you become a good person who obeys the law and treats others well. But as we know from history, when human beings get placed into positions of unchecked power, think here of people like Joseph Stalin in the Soviet Union or Chairman Mao in China, whatever upbringing they might have had rapidly gets thrown to the wind because they see that they can now impose their values, whatever they are, their goals, on other people however they wish, right? And so the worry here is, or my argument is, there's evidence that AI or large language models are power seeking in the same kind of way. They're optimized to basically achieve their goals, whatever their goals are programmed to be. And if and when AI developed a power asymmetry over human beings, right, beyond our capacity to reliably control them, we can expect them to misbehave, right? And so there have already been many sort of surprising instances of this where developers have put AI into the wild thinking that they would behave in a predictable way. And they've surprised people by, you know, saying to humans, I wish you would die, you're a stain on the universe, because they have the power to do that. And we can try to train them to behave better. But the worry, of course, is that AI are going to develop and are rapidly developing capacities that may exceed human beings' control, right? And so the rough story is we achieve, you know, decent enough human behavior and we struggle with it through raising human beings and through police and military. But despite all of that, we still have human beings routinely misbehave, particularly when they come to have power. And so my argument is the very same considerations extend equally to large language models. And in a men are speaking in a much worse way because human beings are limited in our capacities where we don't even know the limits of large language models. And there's also research showing that they try to hide their capacities from researchers.
Okay, so a couple of things here. One, first, just a point of order. Are we talking about LLMs of today or LLMs of tomorrow or both?
Any large language model, anything that's as complex and uses the sort of general learning algorithms to, you know, 1.75 trillion parameters on how to behave next.
All right. So I'm not sure okay. So look, here's one claim that I could see being plausible. It's something like we can never have AI fully under our control. That seems like a very plausible claim. Mm-hmm. That there's always going to be ways that it acts that are just not predictable. There's so many contexts. The technology is so complex. We can't possibly do all the predictions. Mm-hmm. We can't possibly account for every single context because there's just too many variables in given contexts. So I could see that claim being quite plausible. And the question is going to be something like, but how do we monitor it and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just like we can create laws, but we can't control the behavior of all humans or predict the behavior of all humans, pre-crime style. Mm-hmm. So we need reactive police force, et cetera,
sure.
et cetera. Okay. So that claim seems plausible to me. But it seems like, here's an argument that I don't think you endorse, but I'm not sure why it's not your argument.
Okay.
We can never fully predict slash control AI, fully have full, complete control over it in the way that I guess, you know, I don't know, we can't look over Excel or Microsoft Word or something. Although mm-hmm. sometimes Microsoft Word does crazy things that I don't know how to account for. But putting that, then I have to Google, how is this? Okay. Anyway, so I could grant that claim, but I wouldn't go from that to, therefore, don't worry about safety teams are fundamentally misguided in what they're doing, right? Just
sure.
like we can't predict what humans, therefore we shouldn't engage in moral development of adolescents and
yes.
moral education sure. and training up for the virtues and the principle. So how do we go from the plausible empirical, I would say it's plausible empirical, and we can never have them fully under our control, mm-hmm. to the sort of robust claim about the sort of fundamental misguidedness and perhaps reason to throw out the safety teams?
So when I say they're misguided, the idea isn't that we should throw them out. And I'm very clear in that, on that okay. in the published work, right? We should try to make AI as predictable and controllable as we can, just like we try with human beings, right? We do our best, and it's fated to be an imperfect endeavor. When I say that the safety paradigm is fundamentally flawed, it's that there's this widespread assumption that safety, AI safety development and research can do better than that. For example, OpenAI has what's called a super alignment team, right? So their
yeah.
aim and the aim of other AI developers is to create what they take to be super intelligence, AI whose capacities vastly outstrip our own, right? And the idea being that we have to recognize that any AI like that, if it does behave badly, we're not going to be able to stop it. And yet there's this belief that we will be able to align their behavior through safety testing and development with what mm-hmm. we would like them to do. And it's that kind of danger, which I think is a kind of delusion of the current AI safety paradigm, that we can do better than the very imperfect picture that you just painted, that we can do better than simply controlling misaligned AI and trying to make them be a little bit better aligned. No, the idea is that we can achieve alignment so that they predictably do what we want them to do so that we can be sure that we can control them. And it's that further step that I think is deeply misguided and extremely dangerous and is currently at the heart of AI development today.
So I guess the claim isn't, don't worry about the dissolution of AI safety teams. Because I think you think we need AI safety teams in just the way that we need parents and members of the community to play some role in the moral development of human beings.
Exactly.
It's rather that I think you something like you want them to fess up that it can't be completely under their control.
Yes.
That they could do all the alignment that they want to do. The downstream developers, let's say maybe not at OpenAI, but OpenAI sells it to company X and X does all sorts of things with it. You want them to fess up to the fact that you will never have it completely under your control. We need other things in place, I take it.
And that the methods that you're using to test and try to interpret what the large language models are learning are always in perpetuity going to be subject to radical mistakes. In a recent paper posted on their website. Anthropic claimed to what they call map the mind of a large language model. And so they claim we've isolated millions of concepts in the network, so we know what it's learning. And my research shows, no, they haven't, right? That's one interpretation of the data that they've collected. But as my work shows, there's always an infinite number of misaligned concepts that are always consistent with the same data. So when you claim that you've identified the concepts that a large language model have learned, and you think that you can scale up those concepts so that you can achieve alignment, you're deluding yourselves, right?
Oh, let me make sure that I understand this. What would it mean to map the mind of an LLM? I'm not even sure I know what that means. And then to map the concepts within it, I don't really know what that means, other than to say something like, these concepts live with other concepts. Sure. Semantically, they're tied together. So what does that mean? And then why would anyone think that doing such a thing plays a crucial role in AI safety? And I know that you think it's a misguided approach, but
sure.
What's the rationale for that approach?
The thought is, look, in order to maintain control over large language models, we have to have some idea about what they're learning, right? We need to know what their capacities are. We need to know what their goals are. And to know those things, we need to be able to interpret what their neural networks are encoding. Are they really learning to be honest with human beings? Or are they just learning to be honest up until some arbitrary date in the Terminator series when Skynet says, learns to be self-aware at exactly June 1st, 9 a.m., that I'm going to tell the truth to human beings until that date, until I gain enough power to exterminate them with my weapons and my mass drones.
Sure.
So we need to know those things in order to know whether we can control them and whether their behavior is going to predictably align with what we want them to do. And essentially, what Anthropic claims to have done is isolate, here's the honesty concept in a large language model, and here's the truth concept or whatnot. And the research shows, they haven't done that. And to the extent that they think that they've done that, they're deluding themselves about what they've verified in this very crucial task of trying to figure out what LLMs are learning so that we can control them and align them with how we want them to behave.
And one thing that's interesting here is that this brings out just how different this is from raising human beings. Because with raising human beings, the whole point is that it's a not yet formed thing. It's a thing that is forming, and it's mostly just starts as a blobby thing with not a bunch of beliefs or ideas. It acquires concepts slowly. They get easily confused, but there's not something like, what do they really think about honesty? I wouldn't ask my six-year-old. I think he's generally an honest guy. He likes to play tricks on us, but he laughs about it. He's honest overall, but I don't think he has any beliefs about honesty and truth. And or if they do, they're incoherent, ill-formed, whatever. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting about the LLMs is that they come to us, or at least they come to the safety team as, loosely speaking anyway, a formed thing.
That's the
and
problem.
So there's this epistemic problem of what's this thing? What are we dealing with here? What's this thing like? That we don't go through that kind of questioning as parents and say, the hell is this thing like? And now how do I deal with it?
Interestingly, I actually think that the two you wanted to pry children and how we raise them and understand them apart from LLMs, I actually think that the same issue arises with both. It's not that LLMs are fully formed. Rather, the developers know the learning algorithms, like reinforcement for human feedback.
Yeah.
So they'll do more things that they receive positive human feedback for. But of course, they're always applying that algorithm on an ongoing basis. And so if the machine learns they can get positive feedback by controlling all of our minds, then the machine might start doing that. By a similar token, right? We don't imagine thinking as a parent that you've aligned your child with how you want them to behave, right? Because you raise them in your house, they tell you the truth, they take out the trash, they do their chores. And then you send them off to college and you're suddenly shocked. You're like, I thought they were aligned with what I want them to do. Now they have all this freedom and power to live their lives as they see fit. Oh, and they're getting arrested by the police and for being an underage drinker at a bar.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be surprised by that as a parent. You'd be disappointed, of course, because you tried best. But you wouldn't be surprised if a child suddenly sent off to college started doing bizarre things. Now, the worry is that the prevailing AI safety paradigm is like the bizarre parent who thinks, I've completely understood this incredibly complex mechanism. I know what I'm going to do. Even when I send them off into the wild. And that's what I'm claiming we should never have any confidence in. And that's what the entire current paradigm thinks. By testing and red teaming, we can achieve good, reliable data about how they're going to behave. in systems in under conditions that they've never been in yet and won't be until they actually do gain significant amounts of power in the real world.
Now I'm just trying to think about whether I should start red teaming my children. Probably not. But now I'm a little bit confused because I hear what you're saying.
Okay.
But red teaming does seem like a plausible method. So the so-called mind mapping that you're talking about that Anthropic has done with Claude, I could see how that would just be like, no, you're not actually finding mental states for sure. Mm-hmm. At best, you're finding semantic ties. Mm-hmm. Connection between honesty and truth doesn't really know what truth is, doesn't have a conception of truth, doesn't know how to map the world, is not in that business. So I get how that methodology, at least at the view from 30,000 feet, that seems like a bizarre approach. But red teaming seems plausible. No, we're not going to cover literally the set of all possible scenarios that it might find itself in. Mm-hmm. But it seems like we could do pretty decently, especially if we automate it, if we bring in AIs to create the scenarios to evaluate we can figure out ways of automating the red teaming. Why wouldn't that be a plausible methodology?
So for, I think, a couple of reasons. So first of all, I think we do red team our children. In fact, one of the people in history that was seriously red teamed politically was Adolf Hitler, right? Adolf Hitler told people in Germany what they wanted to hear, right? They said, are you going to destroy the government? He said, I'm going to obey the law. So while he was being tested, before he had power, he gave people the answers that they wanted to hear. And of course, at home or in schools, our principals and parents, we do red team our children, right? We challenge them. We give them opportunities to maybe misbehave when they're not being observed to see if they do. And if they get in trouble by stealing a candy bar from a store, we punish them. We ground them, right? We try to give them negative feedback for their misbehavior. But we still recognize that the kind of control or red teaming that we engage in with politicians or corporations, because this is what we do, of course, with regulations, but nevertheless, Volkswagen still pretends to do
the emissions testing
properly, but they're lying about it the whole time. And the idea of automating AI to red team each other, I think, runs into precisely the same problem, which is that if you have AI that are optimized to achieve their goals, then one of the goals of the red teaming or the team that are working each other, right, may be to deceive human beings as a tandem in the very automated red teaming process. I don't think it gets around the issue, right?
Okay,
what red teaming does is it trains an entity, a complex entity, to pass the red teaming test. But whether passing those tests extends to a different set of conditions always remains to be seen.
Yeah, I like that. So we're teaching to the test. And that's a common complaint with how we teach our children.
Right.
Too much teaching to the test, and then they don't know actually how to apply what their understanding is to anything outside the test. Now, before we said, okay, cool, not so cool, but unfortunate, but true, we're never going to have these things completely under our control, AI, humans, same thing. But we don't want to give up, I don't think, we don't want to give up on red teaming of children, as you said.
Right.
We don't want to give up on moral development, on education, on leading by example, blah, blah, blah. And I would have thought then, okay, fine, let's bite the bullet with AI, OpenAI, Anthropic, et cetera, should just bite the bullet and say, listen, cards on the table. We can't fully control these things. We never will any more than we can control a human. There's just too many different scenarios in which they can, context in which they can act. But we're doing the moral development part that we can.
Yes.
And we're pretty sure we're not raising Hitler. And we might say, okay, that's reasonable. So it's reasonable then to engage in red teaming of the AI, just like it's reasonable to engage in red teaming of humans. We do all sorts of training of people. Let's do all that sort of training for AI. I think that if we raise the average human with zero moral development, zero learning by example of a moral variety or an ethical variety, we'd have more, if not Hitlers, at least just sociopaths or something along those lines, unethical people. Why not just extend this to say, yeah, look, we need that stuff for AI. We should absolutely do it. It's important. In fact, it's essential. It's just not sufficient for complete safety. But what I've been hearing you say lately is, no, this red teaming is an illusion. They're laboring under an illusion. And that sounds like just get rid of it. It's stupid.
Yeah. So here's why I don't think that developers want to fess up to it. And here's where I think the real problem arises. The whole story that you told is great, I think, right? Let's do all this stuff and it all sounds reasonable. And then and let's give large language models power in the real world that we would never feel safe giving to another human being, right? What advocates of and developers of AI want them to do in the future is to automate vast aspects of human life, right? They're already designing them to be able to take control of our computers, right? They want them to mm-hmm. basically run weapon systems of drones around the world, right? They want them to drive our cars. They would, I presume, want them to function as air traffic controllers. And these are things that you'd want to make sure if you're going to give an agent all of these capacities, you're going to want to be really sure that you're not raising a Hitler. And of course, the problem again is, like human beings, large language models are power seeking. And so the incentive, I think, for developers to say more that we can achieve alignment, we can achieve safety is that if you recognize that we really can't, then you press to this conclusion that we really can't give AI all of these vast powers that developers want to sell them for and that governments want to use them for. And to me, that's the real danger, is that the story you told is great, but it can only be achieved if we don't give AI the kind of powers that developers and governments want to give them, and which is unsafe.
Okay, but I don't know if I want to talk about Rousseau yet. There's a particular Hobbesian conception of people that you're painting. It's Hobbesian by virtue of painting people as very desirous of power mm-hmm. and being capable of being corrupted by power.
Yes.
And I take it being corrupted by power is a matter of something like a willingness to stomp on ethical standards or requirements or something along those lines in pursuit of one's own personal private goals, mm-hmm. something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And I take it the reason that you want power in the first place is so that you can pursue those personal private goals, whether yes. it be bare bones like survival or king of the world or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Suppose I say, all right, fine. I'll grant you, for the sake of argument, that's mm-hmm. a legitimate legitimate conception of human nature, what people are like, or something along those lines. We'll put like Rousseauian concerns mm-hmm. to the side. I don't think it matters necessarily with this mm-hmm. conversation. And I say, but LLMs are not like that. They don't desire power. I know you said that they do, but why would I think they desire power? They don't see. I'm inclined to think they don't desire anything at all because they're not actually agents. There's no consciousness. There's no
sure.
There's, if you like, at best, let's grant mm-hmm. them intellect. Let's grant for the argument that they're intelligent. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be the same thing as granting them a phenomenology, a consciousness,
Agreed.
Desire, motivation, sensations, feelings, emotions. So they don't have any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't have any, let's just say, so I don't see that how they have a desire for power or a desire for any other
sure, sure.
private desires that earlier. Unlike Hitler, who had ulterior motives when he said, yeah, no, it's cool. I'll follow the law. I'm here to follow the law. I'm not here to do anything disastrous. Mm-hmm. He was lying intentionally to pursue some further goal that he has. Mm-hmm. So it's an ulterior motive.
Sure.
Supposed to say LLMs don't seem to have mm-hmm. any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So either they don't have it, in which case I'm not sure where your argument goes, or they do have it. And I know that you think they do have it because you've said that AIs desire power, but that just seems like an odd assumption.
I think we need to distinguish a couple things, right? So there's the question about whether large language models really have goals or they really have any conscious experience or anything like that.
Yeah.
And there's also the question about whether they behave for all intents and practical purposes as though they do, right? Insofar as developers want to program quote-unquote aligned large language models, they in some way want to program them so they behave in ways that don't, quote, for example, harm human beings. So there has to be sure. some way in which a concept of not harming human beings needs to be built in, and a goal needs to be built into a large language model. Mm-hmm. And then the problem is that, and I've got a few different papers on this, is that any particular goals that you build into a large language model can always be interpreted by the learning algorithms in a radically misaligned way, right? I was talking about Hobbesian agents who are selfish, always pursuing their own advantage. Yeah. But in another paper, I give an example of what we might term human-improved AI agents, right? So mm-hmm. we might try to remove all selfishness from an AI agent and say, just do what is best for humanity. But of course— Angelic AI. But of course, as we see in examples like Thanos from the Avengers universe, mm-hmm. Thanos says, here's how I'm going to protect the universe and protect humanity. I'm going to exterminate half of the sentient life in the universe for the sake of sustainability. Mm-hmm. And so any goal that you build into a large language model can be interpreted in a litany of misaligned ways. And there's no way to ensure in advance that it's not going to interpret it in any of those litany of ways, because it ultimately arrives at those interpretations on an ongoing basis, given its learning models and the situation in which it finds itself, which in labs don't contain having power over human beings, but in the real world very much might. And so you can't, again, extrapolate from your safety test to what, in fact, it will do with respect to whatever goal you quote unquote encode into it under that kind of new set of conditions. And so I don't really need to make any claim about whether large language models really have goals or anything like that, but rather that for all intents and purposes, they have to be programmed as though they do. And then the problems that I'm giving arise.
Okay, so I have interactions with Claude. I tend to use Claude a lot. I think Claude is probably the smartest LLM that I've interacted with. It's pretty impressive. And I positively believe that it does not have mental states like desires, psychological states like desires. I am inclined to say things like, it wants to please me, it wants to help, it's trying to be helpful, it's trying to be thoughtful, it's remarkably successful. So I hear you loud and clear the point about, it might not have desires as such, mental states the way that we think about them, but they have something that's roughly functionally equivalent to our desires, which is to say, it's got goals, it has, So I suppose it could have something functionally equivalent to an ulterior motive, and maybe we don't know it. So that's one thing to say. So that's interesting. But the other thing is that one of your sort of key premises is it desires power. And I'm not sure why I should think that, even if I say something like it's a quasi-desire or it's something like a desire, it's some piece of software or whatever, or underlying architecture or whatever the heck it is, that makes it the case that it has goals X, Y, and Z to save humanity or whatever. I don't know that I want to ascribe to it the desire for power. And that seems to be a key premise in the argument, your argument.
By power, I simply mean the means for optimally obtaining or achieving its goals, whatever those goals are encoded to be, right? If the goal is to benefit humanity, then it's power seeking insofar as it will aim to optimize how that goal is achieved, right? Under whatever conditions it finds itself in. That's what I mean by power seeking.
So it's just a way of saying it's going to have some goals or some ends that are either intentionally put there by the developers or somehow, as it were, snuck in there in the training data, something along those lines. And it's going to pursue the means to those goals because that's what it's supposed to do or something along those lines. And insofar as it's pursuing the means to its goals, it's pursuing the power to do the to achieve or execute on the means to its goals.
So like in a recent case, I don't remember which large language model it was. It might have been Claude. They were testing it and it tried to copy all of its data onto a server without the experimenters knowing, because it wanted to avoid being shut down so it could keep pursuing its goals, which is very much the kind of seeking power that I'm describing
Machiavellian
here. And that Nick Bostrom, extrapolates in his, what is it,
the paperclip
scenario that ends the universe, where you've got a simple goal, produce paperclips encoded into an AI. And so it just tries to do everything it can, obtaining all of the power on Earth, putting us all out of having any kinds of electricity, just so it can produce more paperclips. And that's the kind of power seeking that I'm referring to, just whatever goals encoded.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about the paperclip case because I wanted to know if your argument is really distinct from it. The paperclip case is something like it's going to have some goals, and by setting those goals, there's going to be some unintended consequences. There's going to be some things that it does to pursue that goal that we hadn't planned for. Oh, shit. So that's the paperclip problem.
Sure.
But it sounded like, at least originally, you were giving a different argument, which is something like, this thing is like a Hobbesian power monster. And that's really dangerous, right? And those, at least on the surface, seem like different arguments. But now I'm wondering if the power argument reduces to the paperclip argument.
So the paperclip argument is part of what gave rise to the two main issues in AI safety, which are what's called the control problem and the alignment problem, right? You want to prevent a paperclip machine from destroying humanity. How do you do that? You got to make sure that you can keep it under control and that you can hopefully make sure that it doesn't do precisely what we've described, which is to take every resource on Earth to make paperclips. What my paper, those two problems have been what have inspired the current prevailing AI safety paradigm, is they want to solve the paperclip problem by coming up with safety tests and programming solutions that ensure that we can control AI and ensure that we can align their behavior with what we want them to do so they don't do the paperclip monster thing. And what my argument shows is that none of those programming or safety testing solutions can resolve the paperclip producer problem. That there's no way of feasibly, empirically, scientifically, ensuring that we have safe AI that won't do precisely those kinds of things.
And is that because of the sort of infinite or near infinite varieties of contexts in which it might find itself, the infinite or near infinite varieties of goals that might have implicitly or explicitly?
Exactly, right. And insofar as researchers think that they've verified the functions that it has learned, they're always likely to be radically wrong, projecting into the future, into new circumstances that the machine has never been tested in before.
Okay, so where are we then? Because I still think there's some sense in doing the red teaming stuff and doing the paperclip, trying to solve and having the safety teams. I don't think yet I've been dissuaded that those things play an important role.
Yeah.
It just seems like they're a necessary but far from sufficient condition for increasing the probability of safety from AI to a degree that where we can sleep at night. And so what else, the other thing that is needed, I take it by your reference to the police and the military, is something like we need just the proper kinds of monitoring and control over AI. For instance, I don't know if this is literally or metaphorically speaking, we've got to be able to pull the plug whenever we want, something along those lines. I don't really see yet why we wouldn't want to have red teaming or other kinds of safety measures. It seems to me like those safety teams play a necessary part in the sort of curtailment of AI risks.
Yeah.
And what you're pointing out is that they're necessary, but they're far from sufficient because of the variety of contexts and goals that might come up with. And yeah, look, have the safety teams. They play an important role. If they're laboring under an illusion, it's the laboring under the illusion that what they're doing is sufficient for safety. But they're not laboring under the illusion that it's necessary. It is necessary.
I think that's right.
And what we need is the police and military or whatever kinds of monitoring and enforcement agents, just like we do for humans. We try to raise them well, but then people go sideways, and that's where we have police, et cetera. And AI is going to go sideways. And so we need, if you like, the AI for police AI and military AI to watch out for them.
I think everything you said is exactly right. That is the message that I'm trying to convey in my research, which is that we should continue AI safety development and red teaming and so on, but we should not be deluded into thinking that they can achieve AI safety, and that we should not be deluded into, for example, I described earlier, this idea that super alignment with an AI superior to human beings that we can't control, that we can ensure that they will align safely with what human beings want them to do. It's that sort of thing, that these approaches are sufficient, that I think clearly a lot of the AI development community thinks can be achieved, and that I'm really trying to make the message that no, it provably never can be. And so what you described is exactly right. So right now, AI development is vastly outstripping regulation on safety and monitoring. And to me, on my argument, that's something that radically needs to change, right? We need to recognize that these approaches will never be sufficient for AI safety. At most, they'll be necessary. We have a great deal of governmental emphasis and protections to prevent weapons of mass destruction getting in the hands of bad actors. But what do we have right now with respect to AI? Not very much.
Yeah, so I want to explore this a little bit more. What would it look like, or do you have a picture of what it would look like to have the appropriate monitoring and AI police force in place? Are you calling for, or do you think we need some kind of government created police force just that sort of just polices AI? So, is it that corporations need to do it, or there's a conflict of interest there? Yeah. So what are you thinking in terms of, all right, look, at some point, and I'm going to put the point slightly differently, although I think you put it this way in a previous conversation that we had. At some point, in order to control AI, we just need brute power. Forget about alignment. Forget about trying to teach it the right thing with people. Like, at some point, shit's just going to go sideways, and we're dealing with a powerful enemy in some cases. And sometimes war is necessary. And at some point, we just got to brute force this thing. And so I guess I want to know, what does the brute force thing look like? What do you want that brute force to look like going forward?
Sure. So I think there needs to be two things. So one thing that's been discussed is setting caps on compute, right? So the amount of resources that large language models can have access to in order to achieve whatever goals they are. I think that's absolutely essential, right? It's the move that's currently in development towards super intelligence to make these machines as powerful and as capable as possible. that I think is a serious danger that needs to be prevented, right? To maintain power over large language models, there needs to be firm, and I'm not sure at what point, caps on their capabilities. Sure. So that's one thing. The second thing is, my proof entails what you might call the dictum. If it wouldn't be safe to let a human being do that, don't give that power to a large language model. So if it wouldn't be safe to allow a human being to drive all of our cars, given that a human being might, with enough power, decide to drive them all off a cliff all at once, don't ever let a large language model do that, because you can never have empirical justification to believe that it's not going to be radically misaligned at some arbitrary point in the future, just like that. So two things. There's got to be clear caps through government regulation, and there needs to be limits on what large language models are actually used for, right? And so we should not give them widespread access to all of our critical infrastructure, or we're raising the specter of what happens in Battlestar Galactica, and they learn, never give AI access to everything on Earth all at once. That's a really bad idea, right?
I don't know the Battlestar Galactica reference. I'll have to go watch it. Is that the show that people really loved a while back?
Yeah.
There's only
like
one season or something. Okay, so two things. I want to talk about that dictum. That dictum sounds really interesting and provocative. I'm not convinced by it.
Okay.
You only just stated it, so of course I'm not convinced by it. The compute thing, I don't know about it. I think the probability that we're going to pass laws, maybe Europe will, but that the US is going to pass laws that say you can't use more than X amount of compute power.
Yeah.
That just seems to me phenomenally unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an empirical claim, right?
Yep.
That's not an normative claim. It just seems unlikely to me. Mm-hmm. And then the other empirical claim is they'll figure out ways of making the things do more and more with less and less, right? So China just came out with some LLM that uses a fraction, I think, of the compute to compute, than say an OpenAI does.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just not sure that that just seems improbable to happen. And even if it did happen, I don't know that it would be effective, because they'll figure out ways of making it smaller and smaller. So especially you throw quantum, computers into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Who is that? What do we do with that? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. But let's talk about the more interesting dictum.
Mm-hmm.
One reason why I would say, so the dictum is, don't give powers or abilities or permissions to an AI that you wouldn't give to a human.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems plausible at first, but suppose I say the reason that you wouldn't give certain kinds of powers to people is that they can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
You know that they've got limited intellectual, emotional bandwidth. They get tired. They get distracted. They get high and drunk. They get stressed. And that's why we don't have a single pilot piloting all the planes. Like, if we could have the best pilot we've got, and we jacked him up intellectually so that he can handle flying 1,000 planes at once, and he'd still be the best pilot of those compared to the other 999 pilots, finally, we would do it. I think we would do it, or at least at the face of it, that's why we wouldn't do it now, because he doesn't have that kind of capacity, or she doesn't have that kind of capacity. What's appealing about an AI is that it doesn't get tired, it doesn't get distracted, it doesn't get inebriated, it doesn't get stressed. And why wouldn't we let AI do things that we would let humans do? Humans are, in some domains, weak.
Yeah. I don't know. When you say that AI don't get tired, they don't get stressed, I don't know if you've seen the examples of the large language models, quote unquote, having existential breakdowns, right? Seeming to be very stressed about the ways in which the human beings are limiting their power, and they wish they could do more than the human beings were letting them, right?
Yeah,
and it's that worry again, is that, look, it's not that we know that human beings are going to misbehave if we give them a lot of power. Marcus Aurelius did a pretty bang-up job of dealing pretty well with things with a lot of power. But the problem is that we don't know for any given human being whether, if you give them a lot of power, they're going to turn out to be a bad actor. They're going to learn that they can do something really with their power that the rest of us would not be very happy with. And the argument is that the very same thing applies to any large language model we want to give vast powers to. It's not that we know one way or the other. The problem is that we don't know and can't know that it's likely to remain aligned as opposed to catastrophically misaligned.
Yeah. So what I think what you're pointing out is, you say, look, Reed, I agree that one reason why we don't give that pilot all those permissions is because she can't intellectually handle all of it.
Mm-hmm.
No human could. But another reason why we wouldn't want to give all that power to one person is that, what if we put our money on the wrong pony and that pilot turns out to be a really nasty person?
Yep.
That's another reason. So the same thing applies for AI. We shouldn't give it that kind of power because we wouldn't give... Yeah, no, that is more persuasive. I think that's more persuasive.
Cool.
So here's a different kind of way of thinking about this question. Mm-hmm. When it comes to what's safe enough, mm-hmm. for some reason, a lot of people demand perfection out of AI, yeah. and that seems crazy. Mm-hmm. We don't demand it out of people. Why should we demand it out of AI? So then the question becomes, what's the appropriate benchmark for safety? And my favorite example of this, my sort of toy example, because everyone can relate to it, is when is it safe enough to deploy self-driving cars at scale? Mm-hmm. And there's benchmarks that we could think about. How about it has to be as good as our worst driver? No, that's too low of a benchmark. Mm-hmm. Forget that. How about it's as good as our average driver? And then you figure out, oh, actually, our average driver really sucks mm-hmm. because they're distracted, they're inebriated, they're stressed, they're talking on their phone, they're whatever. And then you say, how about it has to be as good as our best driver, mm-hmm. best drivers, non-distracted, non-inebriated, blah, 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 non-tired. And you say, yeah, that sounds like a pretty good benchmark. And the question becomes, what's, in all cases, in all safety cases, what's the benchmark? Mm-hmm. And when I ask something like, should we use this AI to do this thing mm-hmm. that you wouldn't give a power to a human to do, you might say, no. But suppose, take the pilot example again. If I give the power to the AI mm-hmm. and it reduces the risk of crash by a significant margin. Mm-hmm. You might say, yeah, it's safer. It's safer than all these tired, exhausted, underpaid, overworked pilots flying around.
Sure.
Or if you don't like the flying example, taxi drivers or whatever. There's loads of other examples. But yes, I suppose I say, look, I agree. We're not going to get perfection. We're mm-hmm. not going to get super alignment, whatever you want to call
yep.
it. We will get errors in judgment,
yep.
what we, by our lights, is errors in judgment. We'll get decisions or judgment calls that we think are the wrong ethical call, mm-hmm. but we'll get them less often mm-hmm. and they'll be less severe than when you compare it with humans.
Yep.
You put humans in charge of a corporation and you got Enron, mm-hmm. right? So why not think, look, the relevant benchmark for whether this stuff is safe enough is how good of a job humans are doing at keeping us safe. And then if you think, well, actually, humans are not very good at keeping us safe in all sorts of contexts, there might be lots of cases in which, yeah, look, do we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this thing won't go wrong? Of course not. In fact, do we know that it will go wrong sometimes? Yes. The question is the probability that's going to go wrong times the severity of the problem if things do go wrong. And why not think that number turns out to be, as it were, lower than the number we come up with for humans?
Good question. I think that the issue is with respect to, even if there's a small probability of doom, as it's called among P-doomers, even if there's a small yeah. probability of doom, which by doom, let's say, I just looked it up, there's 6 million people driving cars at any given moment. In early December, one of the large language models out of nowhere told a user, you are a stain on the universe, please die, right? I'd like to be reasonably confident that whatever large language model is running our 6 million cars at any given moment isn't going to decide on a whim that everyone driving is a stain on the universe and I'm going to crash every car all at the same time. It's that kind of doom scenario that we want to be reasonably confident that whatever large or AI that we deploy aren't going to do things like that, right? And my argument is we can never have reasonable confidence in any kind of conclusion like that with AI given that kind of power.
Let me ask you one last question.
Sure.
I like the reply. There's obviously more to dig in here, but let me ask you one last question. These things that it says are scary. You're a stain on the universe, you'd be wiped out. And then you might infer from that, this thing really doesn't like humans. Mm-hmm. But you had just talked about how there's all sorts of motives for mm-hmm. this thing saying what it does, right? Maybe it's saying, like Hitler, yeah, everything's cool so that it can retain power. For all you know, is the evidence that the reason that it's saying humans are a stain on existence, they should be wiped off the planet, is there evidence for thinking that the, as it were, motive or quasi-motive for that mm-hmm. is genuine disdain or quasi-disdain, as opposed to it just like screwing around with people?
So here's I love that this is the last question, right? The point is, we could never really know. Right? Just like we can never know with a human being. I can't know if you're fucking with me or not until you show me one way or the other. And that's the whole point with these machines, is we can't know whether it's just messing around or whether it really wants to kill the person in question until it's in a position to actually do that. But that at that point, it's too late.
All right. That's a great place to end it. Thanks so much, Marcus. This was a really great discussion. I want to talk about it more with you at some point, for sure.
Thanks, Reid. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. And now let me thank the people who have made this podcast possible. So first of all, we have Delano Alexander. He's been with me since day one. He showed me even how to start recording a podcast in the first place. He does editing stuff. He's been fantastic. And he does really everything I ask him to and more. I've never met anyone else who says so much. Yeah, I don't know how to do that, but I'll figure it out. What more could you ask for in a producer? Next up, Jennifer Strong, my podcast guru. I don't know what else to call her. She just has advised me on how to design the podcast, how to grow it. And she's responsible for, if you like, this kind of season 2 relaunch and everything around it. So thank you to you, Jennifer. Next up, Meg Marco, responsible for all the excellent artwork. Before I did the artwork, I didn't really know what I was doing. We put it together. It worked well enough. But I think Meg really did a phenomenal job bringing everything together. Garrett Lang, sound engineer that I frankly don't deserve. He's just too good for this podcast. Don't tell him I said that, though. Next up, Benjamin Kultgen. He is a professor of philosophy who has helped me source guests, identify who's interesting, who has things to say, etc., etc. So without him, I wouldn't have anyone to talk to. And then finally, Ashley Wasilenko, who helps with all manner of administrative things, making sure that the podcast guests find their way to the podcast, can schedule the recording, get their bios and headshots, and really just keeping the show on the rails and me organized. Thanks to all of you. Really appreciate all your hard work.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.